2 weeks ago, state officials gathered in a shopping center parking lot in Dundalk to declare August 1st Henrietta Lacks Day. Last night, the Baltimore City Council adopted its own measure to create a holiday in honor of the woman whose cancer cells led to advances in treatment of cancer, polio, HIV/AIDS, and other diseases. Those cells were taken from Lacks by Johns Hopkins doctors without her knowledge or consent. WYPR's Dominique Maria Benessi reports that lack of consent, compounded by a history of mistrust of medical institutions, still reverberates in Baltimore's gay Black community.
Many became familiar with the story of Henrietta Lacks through the HBO movie The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, based on the nonfiction novel by Rebecca Skloot.
Everyone's saying Henrietta Lacks donated themselves. She didn't donate nothing. They took them and didn't ask.
There was also the infamous case of 600 Black men at Tuskegee University in Alabama whose syphilis went untreated without their knowledge or consent as part of a U.S. Public Health Service study from 1932 to 1972. Their story was dramatized in the 1997 movie Miss Evers' Boys.
The fact remains that patients with a potentially fatal disease went untreated when treatment was available.
It was for the greater good.
Who's good, Miss Evers?
The relationship between medical institutions and the Black community has come a long way since then. There are now laws requiring patients to sign consent forms so patients know what they're getting into. But those stories still resonate, especially in Baltimore's gay Black community.
I used to live close to Hopkins when I was in grad school. And I remember at night when I was coming from college, the driver would be like, "Don't go out at night because they can pick you up for research." Yeah.
That's Kahinde Batamosi, the social innovations marketing manager at the Bureau of HIV Services for the Baltimore City Health Department. Batamosi says that even in 2014, a lot of his neighbors around Johns Hopkins believed the driver's warning.
I'm sure he didn't mean it that way. He just wanted me to have some kind of hatred toward the institution.
When Batamosi learned more about Henrietta Lacks, he understood.
Oh, I see where this was coming from.
Those negative narratives and misconceptions of medical institutions, says Yvonne Kingon, a care provider with the Baltimore Health Department, are barriers that make it difficult to get young gay men into HIV treatment.
I found that there were plenty of young people that I worked with who were, for many, many complicated reasons, unable or unwilling to adhere to a medication regimen that I would recommend.
Kingon, who worked for 13 years in New York City as a nurse practitioner, says many young people with HIV fail to keep follow-up appointments because they feel judged or stigmatized by their disease, society, or care providers.
Which is often heard as, "What's wrong with you? Why can't you do this? What don't you understand? Do you want to die?" Very, very judgmental kinds of questions that may not be said out loud, but that's how they're received.
In an effort to make more young Black gays feel more comfortable talking about the challenges they face with their disease and seeking care, Batamosi and the health department have started a YouTube series called Baltimore in Conversation.
I got frustrated and I got angry because I just thought it was such a generic model. I thought it didn't meet me at my needs.
In this video, 26-year-old Stefan Hernandez speaks to a support group for young gay Black men. He's talking about one of the support groups he was in prior to coming to Baltimore. Hernandez says when he was told he had HIV, he didn't like the type of one-size-fits-all treatment he received prior to coming to the city.
And I was lucky. I had friends who supported me, but there are so many people out there who do not have those support systems because they can't even get through the phrase of saying, "I have HIV."
Hernandez is not alone in feeling stigmatized. Corey Bradley volunteers with Kahinde Batamosi at the health department. He is a doctoral candidate at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Bradley, also a gay Black man, wonders about other factors that make his peers feel vulnerable.
When testing vans, and tell me if I'm wrong, because this is what I understand from the community and from talks that I've heard, when the testing van is out and you go up to say, you know, "I need to be tested," or whatever the case is, "I want to be tested," they can actually pull your name up and they can see whether or not you are actually positive or not, how long you've been in care, or if you're currently in care. Is that true?
Batamosi nods his head yes. Bradley replies he'd like to see some system that notifies patients when someone looks up their medical information. Kind of like,
when you submit for credit report, it will let you know so-and-so has looked up your credit and that has affected your credit in one way or another.
Batamosi and Bradley say they recognize the importance of scientific research and testing for HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases to report to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. but constant requests for blood samples from Baltimore's gay black community to do that research reminds people of the past.
And it begins to make people feel, why are we overstudied? Why are you always coming to us?
Bradley chimes in and adds,
you know, as
and
much
as we're not getting better. In some people's eyes, you keep collecting this data. I do research. You keep collecting this data, and the rates for HIV are going up.
In 2014, 76% of people living with HIV in Baltimore were black, according to AIDSVU, a National Institute of Health-funded website to prevent the spread of HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases. And black men in Baltimore are 11.1 times more likely to be diagnosed with HIV than white men. Bradley says he and his Hopkins colleagues struggle with the delicate task of making data and information about HIV relevant, accessible, and meaningful to people they serve, given the hospital's lingering reputation.
So that people don't feel like we just keep coming and running HIV tests, collecting blood, and writing papers and getting rich. We also need to be clear that Hopkins has the reputation that it has. Now, this is tough to deal with. Hopkins is who it is because of the suffering of people in Baltimore.
Kingon says the health department's care providers have changed the way they interact with their patients in hopes of changing the negative narratives. She says rather than looking at just the disease, they look at the whole patient and try to create rapport.
We would say things like, why don't you just come in? I promise I won't talk about meds. Come in every 3 months. We'll do some labs if you're okay with that. Let me just know how you're doing.
Meanwhile, Batamosi is taking a different approach to ease suspicions and help young men with HIV stay in continuous care.
So we need to find these stories. We need stories. Stories are going to help us to understand, you know, all of these very mysterious things about healthcare. Let's humanize healthcare.
Batamosi says he hopes through storytelling he can change the narrative and mend the wounds of the past. I'm Dominique Maria Benessi for 88.1 WYPR.